Today on the 21st Show, the race for governor. Ted Dabrowski is a former banker turned conservative policy advocate. He's one of four men seeking the Republican nomination to challenge Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker. We'll talk with him about politics and policy, and we want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open throughout the hour at 800-222-9455. What do you want to hear from a Republican candidate for governor? 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, it's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the past several months, we've been interviewing candidates in the Democratic and Republican primaries for United States Senate, one of the top statewide races in Illinois this year. And in the coming weeks, we're also working to interview candidates for the other top-of-the-ticket race this year, governor. On the Democratic side, incumbent J.B. Pritzker is unopposed as he seeks a third term. A recent Emerson College poll had him with a 51% approval rating, 42% disapprove. Four people are running in the Republican primary to challenge him. Former State Senator Darren Bailey, who won the party's nomination 4 years ago but then lost to Pritzker by 13 points. DuPage County Sheriff Jim Mendrick. Rick Heidner, a real estate developer and operator of video gambling terminals. And my guest today, Ted Dabrowski. Dabrowski was born to parents who immigrated to Chicago from Poland and Ecuador. He earned a bachelor's degree in industrial management from the Georgia Institute of Technology and an MBA in international finance from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Dabrowski's first act in life was in banking. He was a managing director at Citi, spending a significant amount of that time in Poland. Later in life, he went back to school, earning another master's degree, this time in public policy from the University of Chicago. In his second act, Dabrowski has been best known for his roles in two conservative organizations in Illinois. He was vice president of policy at the Illinois Policy Institute and then became president of WirePoints, a website that focuses on the state's economy and government. Dabrowski joins me now for the hour. Ted Dabrowski, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me on, Brian. I appreciate it and look forward to talking about the campaign and the great state of Illinois.
Absolutely. Listeners, as usual, we have a lot to get to. We want to also open the phone lines to you today. You can join us at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. So let's begin just by talking about your background. What? Tell me about your upbringing, child of two immigrants. What was that like?
Well, it's pretty fascinating. Very different parents. Father who escaped from communist Poland. Very, very Eastern European. Hated communism. Loved this country, and just was so passionate about freedom, and protecting that freedom. And my mom, totally different. From a Latina woman, of course, very sweet, very passionate. Just two amazing parents. Just very different. But I'd say the key was that they both came here for freedom and opportunity, and so they knew that assimilation into America was key. Learning English and just being great English speakers was key, and education was the dominant thing. My parents wanted us, my brother and my sister and I, to be educated. So they stressed that was our way out as an immigrant family. That was our way up and out of. Or out into the world, and so we did that. But I tell you, the passion that my father taught me to protect freedoms, and I guess just the loving person my mom is taught me the softer side of life. And they both became American citizens. They both came legally, which is a key. They both were legal immigrants and became U.S. citizens. So I learned so much from them, and they are a huge part of why I love Chicago and why I love Illinois.
I understand you spent part of your youth or childhood in Ecuador as well as Illinois. I wonder what you learned from that time abroad.
Well, I was young. I was from 3 years old to 6 years old, but then I went back often. And Ecuador is a beautiful, beautiful country. But you also learn a lot about the dysfunction of government and poorly run countries. You see all the poverty, and if you go back whatever 50 years, I just the poverty level is phenomenal. And so again, it's another thing to appreciate this country and everything it offers. But they're amazing places. But again, the U.S. and its free markets and its ability to create opportunity for people, there's nothing that compares with it.
So I mentioned you got a bachelor's degree in Georgia. You worked in New York City, Poland, Mexico. What brings you back to Illinois and has kept you here?
Oh, well, I mean, that was it. When I had a great career overseas. I was in Citibank, Mexico for 6 years and loved working there to help that that economy globalize and, tied in and, so they would have more growth and opportunity in Mexico. And then I got a call to go to Citibank, Poland, where I worked for 9 years. And that was the amazing experience because that's where, I got to understand who my dad was and why he was so passionate about America. I got there in 1998. That was about 9 years after the Berlin Wall came down. And it was amazing to work with so many people passionate to return their country back, catch up with the West, bring back, capital markets, individual freedom, just economic freedom. And so I did that. But after doing that for 16 years, I did want to bring my kids back to grow up as Americans. And my gosh, there was only one place that I could think that I would ever come back to, even though I got to see all parts of the world, and that was Chicago. This is, the Chicago area. This is where you have the Latinos, you have the Poles, you have a, international city, an amazing economic engine of Chicago, but also just the lure of Illinois and what it meant for my family. And that's where we started. So this is where I came back, and it's been great.
Why did you leave the world of banking for the lucrative world of policy work? Ha ha ha.
But I loved, I mean, banking was fine. What I loved was helping economies grow. It's fun to take places that are in trouble and work with, and in particular in Poland, work with leaders who want to just lift their people out of, in the case of Poland, yeah, it was a very poor country, very educated, but very poor after communism. And so, right, to just to bring back those policies and it was just amazing. Sorry, and I forgot your question though.
But why did you leave banking? It seems like
Oh,
a, I
right.
mean, you know, it's certainly probably a more comfortable, I'm sure the Policy Institute paid well, but you know,
Well,
it,
not that
probably not
well.
as much
Certainly,
as Citi.
no. No, so listen, I loved finance, but so two things. One, I wanted to come back to America. This is, I remember a dinner discussion at Citibank in Poland, and there's an Italian big fiat guy, and we're talking, and you try to avoid politics and a lot of business, but the conversation turned to politics, and it was something about America. I don't remember the whole discussion, but this guy, his face turned so red, and I saw a hatred in America or a hatred in American policy, and I was like, wow, and it was true. There's a lot of things going the wrong way in America.
This would have been during the Iraq War, probably a
Yeah,
lot of
right.
Polish.
Yeah, because early 2003, 2004. So a lot of anger. Here I am helping Mexico. I'm helping Poland. I started to say, I really want to help my country, and I didn't know how. Right. Here I was doing pure business. I wasn't political at all. I had no idea about politics, but I did know a lot about geopolitics, of course, and in banking, you keep up with. You have to know what's happening in the world. I worked in financial markets, the currencies, the bonds. So I knew a lot. But I didn't know anything about like local politics, state politics. But I knew I wanted to come back. So I finally said, I'm going to give up that life and I'm going to go get engaged in public policy. And I said, I don't know how, but I quit right before. It was perfect timing too. I was lucky. I quit right before that financial meltdown in 2007. And I went back and I got a public policy degree at University of Chicago. I said, let me start over. Let's create a, like you said, part two or whatever it was. And I had a backpack on with a bunch of young people at Chicago, and I started saying learning about Illinois, and it's like, wow, what happened to that great state that my parents came to? I had no idea how bad things had gotten in Illinois, so that became my passion to turn around this state.
So it's one thing to stand on the outside from the think tank world or even journalism, frankly, and offer suggestions. Why do you want to be governor? Why do you want to be the man himself?
Well, you know, so I started doing this work, and as I mentioned, I wasn't aware of just how bad things were. And you know, I went to the Illinois Policy Institute. I didn't know state think tanks existed when I was at when I went to University of Chicago, but I found it, and started writing about it. And I found that when, you know, a finance guy and a data guy, I love to expose the facts and the truth. And I started writing about it, and I got a lot of pushback. And it was right after the big tax hike in 2011, this quote temporary tax hike. And I started showing how job creation started to go down after that tax hike, and people attacked me for it. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. I'm just showing the data and what it says, and people didn't like the narrative that I put. And you know, I was worried that we're going to make ourselves non-competitive. You know, I started doing that. And so I've been doing it for the last 15 years, exposing how our kids can't read. It drives me crazy that I can't get more political people to be passionate about literacy and fixing our failed schools and you know, the taxes and all that. So I did all that for a long time, 15 years. And I've worked with grassroots groups. I've traveled the state with legislators. I've testified. And I finally said, all right, I can keep writing about it. I can keep reporting it. Or given what I've done, given my inspiration of what I saw happen in Poland, where we took a country that had been destroyed and now it's one of the most prosperous countries in the world, certainly in terms of growth rate. Let me take my chance at leading it. If nobody else wants to lead, I'll do it, because I think I know where the bodies are buried and I know what the solutions are. So I jumped in and here I am.
Let's talk. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Ted Dabrowski, one of the Republicans seeking that party's nomination for governor of Illinois. The election is coming up in mid-March, although early voting, of course, opens up next month, depending on where you are in Illinois, different times. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. So a lot of policy we can talk about. Let's start with taxes. You mentioned that. I presume that, like most, I don't presume, I know from reading you for many years now, that you think state taxes are too high. What do you do about that as governor?
Yeah, let me just start by saying one thing that I don't think I've said yet, that I'm just on the record saying, my gosh, we should be a top five state in this country. We should be one of the most dynamic, fastest growing, you know, high wage growth.
I'm saying, what metric? Because we are the fifth largest economy, sixth most populous
correct.
State. So in what metric are you saying that
so,
we're
so
falling
in,
down?
In job creation. So for example, I'll go straight to it. Like under Governor Pritzker, just in the 7 years he's been in office, we are the fourth worst in economic growth in the country. So you line up all the 50 states, we're at the very, very bottom. When you look at job growth, we are fifth worst. When you look at wage growth, we're sixth worst. So we're not creating the prosperity that we need. And that's why people are leaving. That's why, you know, think about it. You know, when you chase away a Caterpillar headquarters and a Boeing headquarters and a Citadel headquarters and Tyson Foods and Morton Salt, you're doing something really, really, really wrong. And, you know, it doesn't matter how you measure it. It's a fact. And so we should be a top five state, and we should be competing with North Carolina, with Tennessee, with Florida, with Texas, and we're not. And so I say that because we should be there. So, you know, one of the things you have to look at, and you brought it up just now, are taxes. Highest property taxes in the country, highest sell taxes in the country. We now have the highest sales tax in Chicago in the country. We have the second highest gas taxes in the country, and people don't feel like they're getting their value for it. Maybe if we had the best government in the country and highest growth, maybe people would put up with it, but they're not. And so when you take all those taxes, and there's different cuts at it, we're one of the highest tax in the country, and yet we're still losing population, we're still losing companies. So we have to bring that down, and we have to obsess about it, because
you well know how complicated this system is, and it's an interweaving series of local taxes,
absolutely,
state taxes. So let's try and disentangle that a little bit. And I should
sure.
say we will need to take a break in about 3 minutes here, so I'm going to hold you
sure.
have to hold you to that. But let's start with the state income tax. What would be the optimal state income tax rate under a Governor Dabrowski?
Well, you know, I think we should try to get back to that 3% that we had before we did the tax hike. We were operating fine with that then. We should be operating with that now. You know, Missouri just announced that they're trying to go to zero income tax. They want to go to zero. You've got Kentucky and Indiana that went to flat rates just a few years ago, and now they're lower than our rates by far. they're in that Indiana's below 3% now. We're not competing anymore. The only one that has like a high rate is Wisconsin. So our neighbors are beating us on lower income tax rates. So if we want businesses to come here, we got to make it competitive for them. I would love in one day in the future to go to zero income tax rate. I always felt like, why do we tax labor? Labor is the last thing you want to tax. Move more towards the consumption like other states have done. But I think we just need to be more competitive for our big businesses.
What do you
The
cut? What's your...
job creators, not just big businesses, sorry, the job creators.
Yeah, what do you cut to get to a 0% income tax rate in Illinois?
Well, of course, there's many things. I think we have to change our culture, but you can start with let's start with quite a few things. One is we have the most units of local government in the country, the most by far, and you can imagine when you have too many units of government, you've got more bureaucracies, more bureaucrats. That means and we have very high paying salaries for many of the positions we have at superintendents or just across the board government positions. And of course, that means big pensions. So, right, we have the biggest pension debts in the country because we have the most units of government, because we have some of the highest benefits. All those things pile up, and they turn into high income taxes. I could talk about the massive administrative growth in our universities. Same thing in K through 12. Massive growth in that. Even as we shrink our school population, our higher ed population, students. We're spending more and more. So I could go on and on because we have many things that we do. We still
Well,
do
we will
pension.
let me ask you to pause there because
Sure,
we will go
sure.
on and on, but after a short break, which we need to take now, we're talking with Ted Dabrowski. He's one of the Republicans seeking that party's nomination for governor here in Illinois. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. You can find other conversations in our series of interviews with candidates for the top offices in Illinois on our website, 21stshow.org. More to come after a break. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today with Ted Dabrowski, who is the candidate, I should say, one of the four men seeking the Republican Party nomination for governor in Illinois to challenge incumbent Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker, who is running unopposed for a third term this year. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number to join our program, 800-222-9455. We'll get to some calls a little later in the hour. I feel like I need to do some disclosures here before we get into the continued policy discussion, which is one, our home station, Illinois Public Media, is part of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And because of that, by virtue of my employment, I am a member of the state university retirement system. My wife also happens to be as well. She works for a different state university. So there's that. Listeners can take that with a grain of salt as we get into talk about pensions and expenses for state government. Not a grain of salt. You know what I mean? Take that into consideration as you will. So Ted, one of the things I know that you are we've talked about income taxes and how that relates to property taxes and pensions, and obviously that is a huge cost driver. Pension costs have crowded out other spending in state government, dealing with this decades of unfunded liability that has built up in the system, the worst funded government pension systems in the country, 100%. The question I have is, with all these things, is how you get 60 votes for that in the General Assembly, in the House, and 30 votes for that in the Senate, with likely Democratic supermajorities continuing in the Illinois General Assembly. How are you going to approach governing in a way that won't be a repeat of what Governor Bruce Rauner, who I suspect, I know, shared a lot of your goals and perspectives on state government and utterly failed to enact huge parts of his agenda that dealt with or aimed to deal with these issues?
Yeah, I think the difference is, Rauner was a full outsider. I'm not sure that he understood the issues fully. I thought he ran a good campaign, but once he got into office, he struggled to execute, let's call it. And I think the difference between me and Rauner, I think, will be is that Rauner thought that he could outmaneuver Madigan, he could outsmart the public unions, and it just didn't work, and it just turned into chaos. The difference for me is that I know these things, I know these issues, I can make them very transparent. I'll make them very transparent, whether it's all the different issues that we've talked about, taxes or these pensions or where we stand in the country, and make them transparent and use that not just with the public, because the public deserves to know the truth. The public doesn't hear the things that I say. The ones that follow wire points, for example, or who follow Illinois Policy Institute, see it, but most people don't, and the media hasn't been helpful. So one is making it very transparent to the people. If you want change, if you want lower property taxes or you want lower gas taxes, then you have to work with our administration and the Democrats who are fully in charge. We have to persuade them to lower things and change things. And so a lot of that will be a lot of negotiation, a lot of transparency. And I think, I do believe, I want to take the issue of like school choice, for example. The number of kids who are reading at grade level has just collapsed in this state. And I've talked about Decatur and Peoria and Rockford and a lot of cities, inner cities, where the reading percentage, the kids that are reading at grade level is like in the single digits or maybe teens, has to change. I think we can find partners in the Black Caucus, in the Latino Caucus, amongst the Democrats. We have to fix that. We can't have our kids unable to be literate. And so we're going to work together. I'm going to show the facts. We're going to have to persuade, maybe some pressure, obviously, right? And obviously some public pressure, because I think the community should know that their kids aren't learning anymore and that they should demand change, reforms, school choice. It's just going to be a long, long campaign. It's 4 years of campaigning and 4 years of negotiating and maybe 4 years of battle, but it has to be done well and it has to be done smartly.
What is different? Why does this not end in tears and 2 years of stalemate as it did with Rauner? Because I mean,
Because Rauner didn't go to the people. Rauner did not go. He did not persuade the people to join him. And we're seeing. I mean, we're going to put out something today. And the last 7 years, we're losing so many people to other states. And this is again part of the public persuasion. If you want change, then you have to put pressure on who's in charge. Look, we have the highest property taxes in the country. Who are the supermajorities? Democrats. They are the ones that have to deliver the change. I will be the agent of change as governor, but they have to deliver it. If you want kids reading, they have to deliver it. And if they don't deliver, then you the public need to kick them out if that's what you want. And I think that's a conversation we didn't have. And Rauner didn't have that conversation. He did in the campaign, but not when he was governor. And that was his big failure, I think. But that's it. If you don't want to pay the second highest gas taxes, then you have to ask the legislature to change that. And this is part of this what you call campaigning leadership. We haven't had that leadership. Pritzker doesn't ask to lower property taxes. Pritzker is the one that doubled the motor fuel tax, which led to the second highest gas taxes in the country. He's leading the problem. And so we have to change that. We have to do the opposite of what Pritzker's doing.
I love talking about the state budget. I love delving into policy. I'm subscribed to COGFA's email lists. I read Wire Point. I read all this stuff. Most people want to talk about abortion or ICE or trans kids on their kids, high school sports team. I think part of the issue you're going to run into here potentially is trying to get the voters engaged in this stuff. You acknowledged it yourself, right? They're not. Why do you think, what magic sauce do you have that changes that?
Well, I think I'm different. I'm from the outside. I am data centric. I do like to present people with the facts. I don't present them with hyperbole. I think people want the same thing. Here's what I find. I found that I was, in Southern Illinois. I spent one of the many trips I've made down there. I spent a whole week down there, and the biggest issue that people complained about was taxes. I mean, by far, when I'm in Central Illinois, the biggest issue. Taxes and property taxes to the driver. And then just whatever was it, a month ago on the west side of Chicago, the people in the Black community burning their property tax bills because they doubled. I think there's enough people out there looking for something. They're looking for leadership, and we haven't had it on our side in the way that we should. Again, Rauner ran a good campaign, but he didn't as the executive, he just didn't keep running that campaign. So I think that's the difference. We just have to keep making our case. We can't think it's just going to happen. It's hard work. It's a campaign, and it's a 4-year campaign once I'm in office.
So part of your job now in the primary election is convincing Republican voters that you are the best person to take it to J.B. Pritzker in the fall. Mm-hmm. Republicans have not won a statewide race since 2014, when, as we mentioned, Bruce Rauner defeated incumbent Democrat Pat Quinn by 4 points. Otherwise, it's been anywhere from 11 to as many as 17 points if you're looking at president, U.S. Senate, and governor. Why do you think, what would you say to Republican voters as to why you are best positioned to challenge J.B. Pritzker and overcome this, at times, 15-point gap?
Yeah, I think if you look at what we're doing so far, and of course, it's a very short period, we have to do persuasion. Our campaign is the one campaign that's actually building the coalition that can beat J.B. Pritzker. So, before I decided to run, I wanted to see whether I could coalesce the donor base across the state. It didn't make sense. If we can't raise money and if we can't show that we can raise money, then it's hard to beat Pritzker. But I've gotten the centrist reformers, a very nice group of key businessmen in Chicago to support the campaign. I've gotten key downstate voters, donors, one that was a major donor to Darren Bailey, now with our campaign. And Dick Uihlein, who gave $50 million, who spent $50 million in the last campaign on behalf of Bailey, is now in our campaign. So one, I'm showing that I've got the breadth of donors, and you got to have that. And if you can't raise money, then you're not going to be Pritzker. That's number one. Two, we're building a coalition of a lot of political support. I'm getting the support. I just won the Peoria County Republican organization. I got their endorsement. So that's in the middle of the state, of course. More than 2/3 of the precinct captains supported here. I was in the northwest suburbs. I got 97% of the Wheeling Township. I won the northwest suburb straw poll, which is a whole bunch of not, I can't remember if it's 9 or 11 townships that voted. We won that, so we're able to do that. I got the Family Institute, which is the pro family group, was with Bailey before, now with us. So we're building the coalition that they can take on Pritzker. Now, the other interesting thing for me and for primary voters is I'm from Cook County, and my running mate is from Cook County. She's an ER doctor, works in the safety net hospital. So she knows how things operate in Cook County.
Carrie Mendoza.
Carrie Mendoza. Yes. And so we're both that. And the other interesting thing, which is, taking advantage of my heritage, I'm going into the Spanish churches and speaking in Spanish to the conservative Hispanics. They are looking for a dramatic change from Governor Pritzker. So I'm able to go into the Hispanic community, and I'm speaking to the Slavic community. The Poles, the Ukrainians, the Romanians, they are freedom loving people. They don't like what's happening under Pritzker. So I'm able to build a different kind of coalition in Cook County than the traditional Republican, and certainly than my opponents. So, put all that together. I'm getting the political endorsements and all that.
Whomever wins the primary, that Governor Pritzker is going to spend a couple of $100 million of his billions
Correct.
Of dollars saying that this is Donald Trump's Republican candidate for governor of Illinois. So let's get into that. What do you think of the job President Trump has done so far in his second term?
Well, Trump's done an amazing job at closing the border. That was something that most Americans will agree on needed to be done, and he did it. So that's been fantastic. I love that Trump put school choice. He put the tax credit scholarship into the budget. I really.
What about the thing where he sends masked ICE agents and Border Patrol into Chicago, and there are clashes in neighborhoods, and now people shot in Minneapolis?
And just real quick, he's trying to bring manufacturing back. So I think he's done a lot of amazing things that have helped Illinois through national policy. He can't help us on. We have to fix property taxes. We have to fix our failing schools, right? We have to stop the out-migration. All that's on us. Trump can't help us with that. That's where I want to lead in Illinois. As it relates to immigration, here's my problem. In Illinois, we want to quickly blame Trump. Why are we a sanctuary state? Why are we a sanctuary city? Why? My question is, and I can't stand the chaos on the streets. What I would do as governor is cooperate with the feds and not let the violent illegal immigrant criminals on the streets. I would hand them directly to the feds, like they're doing in Florida, like they're doing in Indiana, like they're doing in Tennessee. Why do we have this policy in Illinois of letting bad guys back out on the streets rather than cooperate with the feds. So that's number one. I would end the sanctuary city, sanctuary state status to
We
the
did
best of
talk to
my
the attorney
ability.
general a couple of weeks ago, who said that, you know, if the feds bring them a warrant, they definitely cooperate, and they do cooperate with the federal government all the time.
Right, but that's only for federal warrants. But all the other crimes, they're not. And so all the other states, look, Florida, Tennessee, a whole bunch of states, the law is that the local law enforcement must cooperate with the feds. Must. In Illinois, we have the exact opposite. Local authorities cannot cooperate with the feds. Why are we the extreme on the other side? Why aren't we cooperating with the feds? That's number one. Very important, Brian. I would cooperate. I would hand the bad guys directly to the federal law authorities. That way, ICE would not be forced to go track them down wherever the heck they are hiding in the city. And that's what creates the chaos. Pritzker could fix that right now if he would cooperate. Number two, which is also a Pritzker liability, he is the one, like others, fomenting people to be challenging the federal law enforcement. When he calls our federal law enforcement jackbooted thugs, racists, terrorists, Nazis, when he does that, he is fomenting violence. And that's the big difference. I don't want that. I would just say, hey, we're going to cooperate with the feds. That way we don't have ICE chasing bad guys in the streets.
So I think a lot of people would agree with you across the political spectrum on saying violent criminals, sure, arrest them. You know, make them face justice in Illinois if appropriate, and maybe send them back then if that's the case. What mm-hmm. about the tamale cart vendors and, you know, the guys in the Home Depot parking lot just trying to make a living? Which
well,
is where
so the
a
question
lot of these
is,
clashes
right,
come
so,
up.
Right. Well, so the problem is that, you know, and you don't see this happening in Florida or Tennessee because they cooperate, right? We have so many bad guys that if we would just cooperate and our the ICE would be sitting in our local jails taking the bad guys directly. Again, we let them out and we hear the stories all the time. And you know, I've told the story, well, I'll come back to that, but we let them out and we're forcing ICE to go into some building, grab 30 people because they don't know who's who. Why are we doing that? Why aren't we changing our law, get rid of the sanctuary state, get rid of the sanctuary city, and just cooperate? Why would we go against federal law? And not enough.
Do you think
people
it's appropriate
that
ICE is operating, you know, in masks without warrants in some cases, as I was reporting in the past
well,
week?
There's a lot of misinformation. Why are we forcing ICE to chase bad guys in the streets? Why aren't we just turning them over, right? And, you know, you don't hear these things going. And by the way, ICE has been operating like that for a long time. You know,
I'm just trying to understand, if they're in the streets, who would turn them over? Right. If it's in custody, that's one thing. But
right.
Go ahead.
So you got rapists and murderers and a lot of bad guys. And listen, we all have to go back to the beginning, right? When the border was wide open, 12 million people, whatever the number is, come in. And even if it's a small percentage of those people, if they're criminals, right, they're going to get where's a great place to go? You go to a sanctuary city, a sanctuary state that's not going to turn over bad guys to the federal authorities. And that's the problem. We're harboring criminals. And I ask this question, if ICE doesn't get them, who does? Because you and I are not going to go get that rapist from the streets. And if ICE can't get them, and if the local jails is letting them out, how do we win? How do we protect our people? I want to protect Illinoisans.
Do you think it's appropriate that agents are operating with face masks?
Here's the problem, right, Brian? Is it appropriate for Pritzker to say, go video them, follow them, go, you know, right? The Pritzker creates part of the problem too, because now he's doxing them, right? Waltz, all these guys are doxing the federal law enforcement. But would it be different, Brian? Because you're trapping.
Doxing means publishing their personal addresses.
Well, but it's come on. When you got people going and you got, gosh, you got people just getting in the way of law enforcement, standing in front of them, blocking them, all that. Pritzker is calling for that. Waltz is calling for that. They are creating a chaos on the streets. I would never do that. I would never call our federal law enforcement names. I would cooperate with them and just get back to normal.
All right, we're gonna have to take another break. We are talking with Ted Dabrowski, who is one of the Republican candidates, or I should say primary candidates, seeking the Republican nomination for governor here in Illinois. 800-222-9455. We'll get to some of your calls after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today with Ted Dabrowski, one of the Republicans seeking that party's nomination for governor of Illinois to challenge incumbent Democrat J.B. Pritzker, who's seeking a third term this fall. The election, primary election, is coming up in March. Early voting begins next month in different times at different parts of Illinois. Check your local listings, as they say. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. And let's go now to the phones. We have Ryan calling from Dixon. Ryan, thanks for waiting. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is about what are the enduring values of the Republican Party today? Because I would like to know, because the Republican Party that I grew up with as a young man in the 90s and the 2000s, it doesn't seem to exist anymore. That party stood for fiscal responsibility. Deficit's never been higher. That party stood for Second Amendment rights. We've just seen the president say that if you carry a concealed weapon lawfully and commit and are engaging in lawful First Amendment activity in a public place, you're liable to be summarily executed by federal law enforcement. Stood for character. I heard a lot about character when Clinton was impeached. I'm not sure the current president, who's the leader of the Republican Party, has much in the way of character. Foreign policy, practical, allied-centric foreign policy, creating a coalition of allies. It seems like the current Republican Party seems to make a game of aggravating our allies. So what are the animating, enduring values of the Republican Party today, and how are they going to characterize this person's candidacy?
Thank you for the call, Ryan. I appreciate it. Ted Dabrowski, over to you.
Thanks, Ryan. I will agree with you in a lot that the Republican brand has to continue to work itself. It's under big change and at the national level. But I will also say this, that I'm highly focused and really only focused on what's happening here in Illinois, obviously as a governor candidate, because we're not going to influence national policy. But I will tell you this, if you know my work from both the Illinois Policy Institute and WirePoints, I don't want to say the word obsessed, but of course obsessed about fiscal policy, because we have the worst credit rating in the country here in Illinois. We got the worst funded pensions here. We've talked about the highest property taxes. We've got a real mess on our hands. And if we don't get hold of it, we're going to keep losing people, keep losing businesses. So I started by saying I want us to be a top five state in this country, and we do have the assets to be that. I mean, as in Illinois, we have all the great assets. I won't go into them. So we have to bring back fiscal reality. We don't have any fiscal reality currently under the Democrats, who control everything right now. So my goal is to bring back that fiscal reality that you mentioned. By the way, another thing I love is local control. We've centralized so much decision making in Springfield that our cities can't decide things for themselves. Our people are losing their own freedoms. They're taking away parental notice, parental control over things. So that's a huge thing. You're right about Second Amendment, man. Protect the heck out of that Second Amendment. Don't allow these laws to creep in there. You got to protect that. I'm a huge fighter for free speech. I fought when they closed our schools during COVID. I fought the forced masking, the forced vaccination. So I am for many of these traditional Republican values that are so important, and of course to bring back the character. I think if you watch how I operate, how I talk, how I negotiate, how I persuade, I try to do it with the best character, because I think in the end, in Illinois, to win over the other side, we need to be reasonable, we need to be logical, we need to be persuasive. So those are all key things for me.
Another caller, DJ, is calling from Sycamore on line 4. DJ, thank you for calling in.
Hi. From the last candidate that I was listening to, from what he said, it sounds like he wants to capitulate and turn, in his own words, turn everyone over to Trump and the federal government. It does not seem to matter if there are infractions and infringements on people's constitutional or legal rights. It really sounds an awful lot like he's running for the ticket on the wrong party.
Thank you. Thank you for the call, DJ. Ted, do you want to respond to that?
Thank you, DJ. I'm not sure what you're saying there. All I'm saying is I'm suggesting we follow federal law, and the only people that they can arrest are criminals, and we should do like like Indiana, like Tennessee, like all these other states that are not sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, just work with the federal government under federal law. I'm not suggesting anything other than that. So I'm not sure what the point of DJ was.
Vanessa is calling on line three, visiting Illinois from out of state. Vanessa, thanks for calling in.
Hi. My question is I grew up in Central Illinois, and I'm going to retire soon and thinking about coming back. But when I look what it used to be and what it is now, the tax rate, the property taxes, the overreaching of government into every aspect, what are you going to do for downstate? It's not all Chicago. It's the farmers. It's the small schools. It's the small town atmospheres that we're losing because we don't have jobs. We've been promised a fertilizer plant for years and years, and it never comes about. What are you going to do for downstaters?
Vanessa, Vanessa, I love your question. You know, I've spent a lot of time in Decatur and Peoria and in southern Illinois. And look, a revival of Illinois is not just about making sure Chicago does well. The true revival of Illinois is when we start winning the big deals, the big plants, instead of them all going to Alabama and Georgia and North Carolina and Tennessee, that we start winning those here. And we're not. And we're not going to win them as long as we're a fiscal mess, the fiscal mess that we've been under Democrats. So that has to change. Everybody knows we're a fiscal mess in the country. And they say, why would I put my plant in Central Illinois when people are leaving the state and when the finances are a mess and the taxes only go up? So we need to change that whole environment. And that's why I'm running, is to flip that culture, to flip that mentality so that we can win the deals for Central Illinois. Look, Decatur, Peoria, Danville, you all have great bones. And you know, can attract big companies, but it's not going to happen until we change these crazy taxes, until we change the crazy culture, and get back to just fiscal discipline, so that we can be proud of who we are, and companies can say, Illinois is now well run. We want to be there.
One more caller, Mark in Urbana, is calling in on line five. Mark, thanks for calling in.
Hi, I was just wondering, my uncle recently just passed away, but he was Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell from Colorado, and he walked the lines of both political parties. My question was, I view him as one of the last true politicians in our country because he represented his people that elected him, and I feel like that is deteriorated, if not completely gone now. I would just like to know what your thoughts are on that and what you'd like to do for the Republican Party or any other party in that respect. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love the question. Look, I started out by saying I'm a son of immigrants. I you know, the Polish side of me, the Slavic side of me, the Hispanic side of me, I think differently from the other candidates. I think about the broad coalition. This is Illinois. I don't think in you know, purely partisan terms. I think in terms of, my gosh, opportunity, right? People need physical security, and that's gone right now, right? People are scared to get, if you're in Chicago, you're scared to get on the CTA. If you're downstate, there's concerns about the Safety Act. So we have physical security issues, economic security. People are feeling like their property taxes are chasing them out of their home. These gas taxes are crazy. So we got to bring back those things. And so I'm all about opportunity. I remember as a young immigrant family, you learn how to compete and to make do, but you got to have opportunity. And so I want to bring that back for everybody. It's not a Chicago thing. It's not a Central Illinois thing. It's a Southern Illinois. It's all of the above. And I think we can do it. And it look, running on the Republican side, I have to win independents. I have to win centrists. I have to win over people in the Black community and the Hispanic community. And that's the task. That's the goal. We have to work together to make this state the great state that it is.
Let's be real here. I think that, I went back and I have this chart that I keep handy for these conversations. No Republican, I think I said this earlier, no Republican has won in Illinois statewide since 2014. And the one common denominator in all that time is President Trump. And his approval rating is significantly lower here. I mean, it's a underwater. Can Republicans win? How do you connect with voters who are horrified, frankly, by what they see happening out of Chicago. We hear from them all the time on the show.
Well, I guess it depends who you hear from. I think the kitchen table issues dominate. I know that you know, the immigration thing is a big deal, but you know, you got to remember, you know, the Black community was so unhappy with the $2 billion that Pritzker spent on health care for illegal immigrants. There are people angry about that. There are Latinos who came here, waited their turn, have been working here, and then suddenly had a flood of Latinos who come in illegally, and they take jobs, and they lower wages. So there's a lot of people who aren't happy about what's happening. They don't like the crime either. So, and let me just be clear. Illinois is run by Democrats. It's the supermajority, Pritzker, the Supreme Court. We are in the worst shape we have ever been in Illinois. And so that's our opportunity to offer something different. If you know, this is a change election. If you want the same high property taxes, we've led the country in Chicago in murder rate for 14 years in a row. If you want the same, go for that, right? You got your Brandon Johnson, you got your Governor Pritzker. But if you want change, if you want something different, then you've got to vote Republican. And I'm, of course, making the pitch that I'm the best one to lead that effort. We just got to get back to good old Midwestern values. We're a Midwest state, and we've lost our way with this supermajority and Governor Pritzker.
I think we can squeeze in one more call as we're coming to the end of our time here. Jerry is calling from Decatur on line 3. Jerry, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I agree that I believe taxes need to get under control, but I've also said that for years that if there's going to be change and help in Illinois, that's going to have to be pain. So if we're going to cut taxes, where do we cut spending? And please be specific.
Yeah, I'll be very specific. I live in Wilmette, and the Nutria School District is my district. And this is fascinating to me. We have a high school district, and it's got 6 feeder districts, coterminous, inside that high school district. So there are 7 school districts. Each one of those superintendents make over $300,000 a year. And not only that, but they have massive staff. Why? Why isn't it one school district with one superintendent? And we don't need the duplication of lawyers and bookkeepers and accountants and all that. Think about the savings there, and think about the pensions that cost. So, and those are income taxes paid by everybody to pay the pensions. Just make it one unit district. So that's the kind of stuff. I'll give you more. We are doing salary spiking at the end of government workers' careers. Many of them get 5% increases for the last 5 years. Automatic 25% bump, which pushes up salaries, pushes up pensions. Why? Ordinary people don't get that stuff. Same thing with, we're still doing double dipping. Superintendents are retiring with full pensions and then going and working part-time or half-time and getting salaries again. This is the kind of stuff that's not fair to everyday Illinoisans. So those are cuts. They're painful, but they're not. Think about that kind of spending is not. It's not productive. It's wasteful. So I look to just cut out waste, and I can keep talking about waste because I've been looking at it in Chicago public schools, across higher ed. We have waste, and we can do better. We can do better.
I would love to press you on the question of whether there's enough waste to really make up that difference, but we are unfortunately out of time. Ted Dabrowski is one of the 4 Republicans seeking his party's nomination for governor. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, thank you, Brian, for having me on. Appreciate it.
That is all the time we have for our program today. You can find other conversations in our series of interviews with top-of-the-ticket candidates in statewide races here in Illinois at our website, 21stshow.org. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the Trump administration says it wants to rein in corporations and private equity buying up single-family homes, aimed at alleviating a tight housing market that's seen significant price increases. We'll talk about what that could mean for home buyers and check in on home prices across the 21st state. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. And Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I mentioned our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find links to subscribe to our podcasts. Or if you want to share this conversation with someone or any conversation from the program, obviously you can do that from our website. You can also find us on Apple or Spotify or YouTube or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.